gorgeous.
Oh yeah, I think I've seen that. That's the one with the gang wars and shit, right?
You know what that movie's about? Gay cunts. That entire film is a metaphor for homosexual aggression.
What?
Yeah, what are you on about, Audrey? This looks pretty badass to me.
Think about it. It's just a basic story of a bunch of dudes in leather vests running away from their own homosexuality. You know what? We'll watch that shit again. You'll see what I'm talking about. See, the whole night these warriors are running away from a bunch of gangs that are trying to get their asses. And if you notice, each gang they face gets stronger, and consequently, more faggier. More makeup, more leather. Meaning that it is their growing lust for bum tickling and pillow biting that they have to battle. See, what they're fighting is the urge to turn over to the gay side. To embrace their fucking homoerotic pleasures. It's the basis of the whole storyline. And where did it begin? At a fucking huge village people convention.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
It was their buttholes they were digging that night.
Return of Durant.
That's Dark Man 2. I do like that one.
Okay.
Or is that Dark Man 3?
I've definitely never seen Dark Man 3.
Dark Man 3 might be Die with Dark Man
Die. I don't think I've seen Dark Man 2 either.
Second one I saw.
Also,
definitely saw Return of Durant.
Dark Man, from what I remember.
Yeah.
Really bad movie.
Give me the fucking elephant!
Oh, God. Maybe I was just too young to understand Dark Man when I watched that as a child.
Give me the fucking elephant!
But, that really put me off Sam Raimi for a while.
I
had like a Sam Raimi's overrated poo-poo face about him because I was not a fan of Dark Man.
I was a big Dark Man fan.
I was brought back around when he made The Gift and Tom Cruise's wife's titties were all over the screen and Keanu played that creepy hillbilly and I was like, okay, this guy's got something
here.
I
never saw that one.
Oh, it's stupendous.
I saw Dark Man.
Those tits were really surprising, Matt.
Were they?
Watching that Dawson's Creek, I didn't know she had tits that great the whole time.
I never watched this
The whole time.
She showed her titties
in that. I didn't watch the show either, but if I knew there was tits like that in it, I would have.
I don't want to wait for a last to be over. I like me some Paula Cole.
Yeah, I like Paula Cole.
That. You know that about me.
Pacey, I wasn't a fan of.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, you do. Pacey from Dawson's Creek.
I don't know which one that is. I don't know.
There's two of them. He's not Dawson, so he's fucking Pacey.
I don't know which one is which, though.
It's fucking Charlie from the Mighty Ducks.
Okay.
You know who Dawson is?
I knew
Let's
that.
Sit here and act like you don't know who fucking Dawson is.
No, I know that Charlie Banks and James Vanderbeek are in the show, but I didn't know who played who. I just knew they were both in that show.
How do you know James Vanderbeek? His name is Dawson. He's known as Dawson.
Well, okay. I don't know.
What James Vanderbeek joints do you like? You know his name, but you don't know the Dawson character's name.
Well, he was on an episode of Eric Andre's show that I really enjoyed.
Oh.
And
check that out.
He was also
a big Dawson fan.
In that the B in Apartment 23.
Oh yeah. The Bee in My House was watching that movie for a while. I did see a couple episodes of that.
Yeah, and Eric Andre is also in that show.
Oh, that's where they met. That's where they
probably. And now that you mention it, I think they refer to him as
Hollywood.
Dawson a lot
Some
in that show.
Connections.
So there's that.
Well, if you're Dawson, you got to have like a meta post-career or you're not going to have a career.
Yeah.
There's no just like, hey, I'm the Beak now.
Oh, he's also
put me in other things.
He showed up in a couple episodes of Modern Family where he plays a hillbilly, fresh out of prison, deadbeat father to the gay guy's.
Sounds great to me so far.
Fat hillbilly sister.
Oh, well, I'm coming around on James Vanderbeek.
And the gay guys are both like, oh, it's those eyes. You just can't tell him no. And like he does this cool, like, well, not cool, but just this awesome thing where he's just like,
you think he's cool?
Where he's like, I'm just trying to be like,
slipped out.
Where he's like, don't worry, like, you can count on me. I'm not going to do anything illegal and shady. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, we're falling for a Southern charm. It's funny.
Do they throw in like a Paula Cole reference in there? Because you got to.
No.
That's hanging above you the whole time.
Sir,
are we going to do that sound drop? Are we going to do that sound drop?
Sir, This show is from the creators of Frasier.
Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do? Frasier has left the building.
All right. Yeah, it's a little more highbrow.
A little restraint
that.
Going right? on there. Yeah. A little bit of class.
Dial it back.
A little bit of restraint.
Don't give them what they want. Give them what they need to know.
Okay.
Or something. I don't know.
I need to know what this show is.
It's Baby Oil and Blow. It's Action Stravaganza. That's what I keep calling it.
Yeah.
There's two hosts. One of them is speaking into the microphone.
Because we only have two microphones.
Yeah,
there's
I
three
think
hosts.
We could
we'd have
work
to buy another
third.
One.
We could work a third in here somehow. I got ways.
I think we'd have to get a bigger mixer, wouldn't we?
I got an audio field mic where we could all just kind of... We could put it down on a table and just kind of bullshit around it for a
we'd
minute.
We'd have to put some of that like foam rubber sound absorption coning around us and make a little igloo, I think, if we were going to do that.
I got a guy for that.
Perfect. Call
He's
him
not
up.
Here, though. He's also named Matt, but nobody calls him that. But I'm Matt-O. With me, as always, is the Pacey to my Dawson. He is Nate Adams.
Oh, hey, everybody.
Are you Pacey to my Dawson or am I Pacey to your Dawson?
Pacey, actually, I was about to break down what their dynamic is, but I realize I've only seen one half of one episode of Dawson's Creek.
That should be enough.
And I thought that it was the season finale the whole time. Yeah. I mean, the series finale the whole time I was watching it because everything was so like melodramatic.
I thought you
and
got
important.
Like hooked onto that for a season,
and
like in reruns in Bloomington. No.
And I just realized that it was just a normal episode of the show and that every scene's like that.
Oh.
So I have no idea what the Pacey Dawson dynamic was.
That seems taxing to get through.
It did seem very taxing, yeah. No, I think you're probably mistaking the period when I lived in West Lafayette on the Purdue campus,
right.
And I was passive-aggressively watching Seventh Heaven every afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
Just because my roommate wanted to watch something else, and we were just voting him out just to annoy him.
What did he just Steiger just wanted to watch Predator
by
every
watching
afternoon?
The most lame thing on TV every day.
It's also how you guys
just
started
out of
watching
pure
that
spite.
Giada.
Oh, no, that was pure joy. We just like watching her titties jiggle as she makes food.
She just never did it for me.
You're out of your goddamn mind.
Well, I spoke out of turn here. Adam Banks and Charlie Conway.
Conway, that's right.
I said Charlie Banks.
The cake eater.
That's Adam Banks.
Oh.
Charlie Conway was just the blue chipper in the North Stars, Minnesota North Stars jersey sweater. That was like, hey, you used to be somebody. Now you're going to try and fuck my mom, Emilio Estevez.
Mm-hmm. I only like him in Cruel Intentions when he plays the gay guy who fucks all the football players.
Again, I don't know if I've seen that movie. I might have.
Missing out on
which
all
one's that
great
one?
Stuff.
That's the one with Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah, and Ryan Phillippe.
I want to fuck.
Whew, yeah, never saw that
Reese
one.
Reese Witherspoon.
No.
It's a great cast.
I saw the Kevin.
There's a lot of sex stuff going
saw
on.
Saw
the
Kevin
very sexy
Bacon one with a threesome.
Very sexy. That's
was that
Wild Things? That's got nothing to do with rich teenagers, so I'm not interested.
It came out around that time and was erotic.
Mm-hmm. See, that was a legit, like, sexploitation movie with titties all over.
Yeah, you got a glimpse of Kevin Bacon's bacon.
Titties and Cruel Intentions. It's just sex stuff aimed at teenagers.
Oh, I don't want that.
No, but it's a great tease.
No, I need it. I need a real deal.
I mean, you at least got to watch the scene where Sarah Michelle Gellar makes out with what's her fuck, that little brunette.
I've seen that.
Okay.
Is that a Rose McGowan?
No, no, no. That's that chick from Storytelling who says fuck me N-word over and over again.
Oh, that's a scene. That's not something you made up, just to clarify.
Her name
might be a lot of people who haven't seen that.
Bing it. Put it in your Bing box.
I'm going to come up to it in the middle of the show and just be like, Blanche Devereaux, you know.
Blanche Devereaux.
Yeah.
We could build a whole series of sweeping Southern plantation novels around that name, I feel like.
That's actually an old Saturday Night Live bit.
Oh, no, the truth's
where
coming out.
Alec Baldwin is the gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
And his thing is he can, or he's the mimic, and he can mimic anyone's voice.
Yeah.
And, they're like in like some trouble and he has to make phone calls and pretend to be people and like they're all really bad and he just always just keeps doing being like, hello, so this is Blanche Devereaux.
So they're similar to his very mediocre Trump impression.
Yeah, but way funnier.
Just building real life right
way
into
funnier
that.
I feel like my Trump's better than his.
Your Trump's untouchable, man.
Are you kidding me?
Give us a little bit of that.
It's huge. Oh, Nathan, it's huge.
I can smell the Kentucky Fried Chicken, as you say. It feels like I'm at dinner with Trump right now. Yeah. It's perfect.
You're saying because his skin looks like KFC or because he eats a lot of KFC?
He's known for eating that all the time.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with that.
Man loves his KFC.
Except for the crippling diarrhea.
That's because they moved to no trans fats. It was all downhill after that shit.
Is that what gave
me? Absolutely.
Oh, jeez.
Back in the 80s, that shit was good. They were cooking it in like real animal grease.
Shit my pants last night.
Oh, yeah.
No. But there's this, you know the baseball player George Brett?
No.
Oh, he was very famous when we were little kids.
Okay.
He hit a lot of hits, and he's one of the greatest baseball players of all time.
Sure.
He's very famous.
Sounds reasonable.
Recording. He was mic'd up for spring training and then forgot the mic was on him and then proceeded to tell this like 19-year-old baseball prospect about how he shits his pants at least twice a year.
Yeah.
Part of
the left side.
I shit my pants last night. I did. Went out and had a great meal, just a great fucking meal. I had to go to the bathroom so bad in the car. I'm going, travel, hurry up, man. I got shit. I had fucking shit in my pants. I wasn't just... I'm good twice a year for that. When was the last time you shit your pants?
Me?
Yeah. Been a while?
It's been a long time.
I was in Vegas a couple years ago. Just an honest to God true story. Staying at the Bellagio. I went over to the Mirage for dinner, met some friends of mine over there. Went to Kokomo's, a great little steakhouse. The guy brings out some fresh crab legs. He just came in. I got to give them to you guys. I'm eating them. Then we go play gamble a little bit. I had a tea time early in the morning. So I said, look, I got to get going. I'm walking back to the hotel. I get three quarters of the way out of the lobby, and all of a sudden I go, oh, fuck. And I'm standing here like this. I got my butt pinched so fucking. I'm fucked. I can't move. All of a sudden, you know, felt all right. I went just like this. Water.
No way.
I had some food poisoning from the crabs. Take off my leather jacket. Tied it around my waist. And I'm just standing there, and it's just running down my leg. I got jeans on, black Bucks, no socks. And I just start fucking walking. Every time I'm walking, something's coming out. It's water. Straight fucking water. Then, to check how sick I was, tell you how sick I was. And then I'm standing outside, I got on my cell phone, and I called the guy. I said, Larry, you won't believe this. I'm standing outside the fucking Bellagio. I can't move. I got shit everywhere. I shit all over myself. And Larry's about a 48 waist. So he brings me over a pair of pants and some towels. And so then he comes over and he meets me where I'm standing. I tell him where I'm standing. He finds the closest bathroom. When you go up the escalator, you go into the fucking... I can't get in the elevator.
But you are not. Baseball. You know?
So he goes in, he finds the closest bathroom in the lobby of the hotel, and then I get in the escalator, and he kind of pretends like he dropped something so no one gets behind me, tells me where it is, I go in there, he goes and gets the towel all wet for me, throws it over the fucking stall, I take off all my fucking clothes, just wipe off, leave my shoes, left my shoes, my pants, everything right there, the towels right there in the stall, and I'm walking barefoot with my shirt and his pants that are 48 waist through the lobby like this at midnight. Got up in the morning, took the most perfect double tapered shit I've ever had in my life. True story. Who's the pitchers in this game?
Speaking of the 80s, not just the baseball players, but kind of about shit. It's grimy, it's dirty, it's necessary. We're talking the Warriors.
That's right. This is the second week in our Walter Hill month. A Hill to Die On, Volume 1, the early films of Walter Hill. We're going from 1978 and Walter Hill's huge, huge failure, The Driver, into 1979 and the movie that saved his career. If he wasn't already filming this while making The Driver, he says they would have never given him another movie to make. This one gets a bunch of press, a bunch of controversy. Yeah. It becomes a big hit. Hey, Walter Hill, he's got a career on his hands.
When did he have his daughter, Lauren?
That's not his daughter. She hates white people. He's a white man.
Well, I figured,
you're mistaken.
Hollywood parents, that's why she hates white men.
No, he's got one son named Bobby. That's his only child.
Hello. My name is Bobby Hill. And this is my very first time doing a friend Connie told me about ASMR. I think I'm going to start out with some ear. Two ear whispering propane. Now I'm gonna do some skis. Thank you for listening to my ASMR video. If you'd like to hear more, I guess just comment, I don't know. Thanks for listening. This has been Bobby Hill. Good night and good luck.
The Warriors, as I said, is from 1979. Budget estimated at around $4 million.
Four is what
modest
I found.
$4 million. It's gross. $22.4 million domestic.
I'll tell you what.
Big hit. Big hit. A lot of bad press once teenagers started going to see this thing and then shooting each other in the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
It worked out real well for Walter Hill, who is our director.
You make a movie about gangs and then market it about being gangs. Mm-hmm. And there's no wonder that the gangs show up.
Yeah, so all those kids shot themselves over Michelle Pfeiffer in the 90s.
No one went to see that.
The stars of this movie, I plucked a couple out of them. There's really no stars.
None.
There's nobody in here you're going to recognize.
Walter Hill has a cameo.
Roger Hill is another one of his mulatto children in this movie as Cyrus,
Strumming
the gang leader. This is the famous Can You Dig It speech.
Can you dig it?
This guy's from nothing. He did like three episodes of three TV shows like around this time and then never worked again. He steals the whole fucking movie. This guy's barely even a goddamn actor. So much charisma.
Famous from nothing.
Michael Beck is playing Swan, one of our main warriors. He's the one that ends up with the chick in the end.
By default.
He was in a couple of low-budget exploitation powerhouses back in the 1980s by the name of Battle Force and, Mega Force and Battle Truck. Both great, great fucking movies.
Battle Truck, we talked about.
If you're looking for some low-rent, super, super B-movies.
I think you and I talked Battle Truck for a minute on the Rolling Thunder
episode. It's definitely
been brought
up. That was in the 80s. Into the 90s, he kept working, man. He went on to do a bunch of episodes of a bunch of great shows.
I want to say Dude That Made Rolling Thunder.
Things
made
like Walker, Texas Ranger.
Walker,
things
Texas
like Jag.
Ranger, yeah.
Things like Nash Jag. Bridges. This guy was all over the fucking action TV.
Nash Bridges. Like, Jag was lame AF.
Agree to disagree on
Walker,
that
Texas Ranger.
Big Jag fan.
It's kind of hokey, but Nash Bridges had like a little bit of that like edgy, cool audience.
That's the one Stone Cold was on every once in a while, right?
Yeah, it was the Don Johnson vehicle. Don Johnson and Cheech Marin.
I need to watch some more Nash Bridges.
Aired on Friday nights. I remember my parents were into it for a minute.
We're a spin-off podcast. One of those Patreon things where people give us money and then we'd talk about Nash Bridges to them.
That's what Patreon is. I keep
James
seeing
Remar word. Plays Ajax. He's the other warrior who's like trying to be in charge, but he's like the real rapey dickhead one that everybody hates.
Oh, so rapey.
Playing him the whole time. He's a Walter Hill regular. Shows up basically everything he makes from this point on. He shows up in random episodes on basically every lame TV series ever. You know him if you see him. Deborah Van Valkenburg is playing Mercy, the like one girl in the movie.
Ooh, Mercy.
The girl who's not wearing a bra the whole movie.
Mercy.
Real
and,
sexy
and
mouth
isn't,
on this girl.
And isn't in the Liz, and isn't in the Lizzies. Easy for me to say.
Uh-huh. She was an orphan.
She was just a whore.
The sister of the orphans, and then she tagged along. Either way, she was a regular on Too Close for Comfort. That's how you know her. I know we got a lot of Too Close for Comfort fans out there listening to the podcast.
She had a snaggle tooth.
Oh, yeah. I'm into it. I was picking up what she was putting down. Last but not least, I got to mention David Patrick Kelly as Luther.
Hell yeah.
The main antagonist in this movie. He's a sniveling bad guy from all sorts of cool action movies. Commando, The Crow.
I don't have bottles.
More Last Man Standing, Walter Hill type shit he does.
Oh, yes.
Regular on Twin Peaks.
Come out to play.
This guy's a true favorite of mine.
He a good dude.
Tagline of the movie. These are the armies of the night. They are 60,000 strong. They outnumber the cops 3-1. They could run New York City. Tonight, they're all out to get the Warriors.
They famously had to take that tagline down, Nathan.
Yeah, how come?
Because the gangs.
They realized there really was too many gangs.
People were scared.
Oh, God.
There was gangs.
Plot synopsis. In the near future, a charismatic leader summons the street gangs of New York City in a bid to take it over. When he is killed, the Warriors are falsely blamed and now must fight their way home while every other gang is hunting them down. Real simple plot.
Mm-hmm.
Real straightforward movie. Seems like it's going to be streamlined like The Driver.
Mm-hmm.
But man, this movie takes a lot of left turns, Matt.
Sure does.
Let's get into them.
Left
and
turns
bullet points.
Down wrong alleys.
Go down all these bullet points.
The Warriors. Starts out, we get a little rundown. They give us a rundown of their own.
First bullet point, the opening.
Yeah.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, the opening is dynamite. You're watching it, and you're like, man, look at all these scrub actors you got in this movie.
A couple shots every once in a while of the Warriors, like, talking about the meeting they're going to. Like, what is it? Fill in the audience on what it is. And then, like, it cuts to, like, some of the other gangs, like, gearing up and moving out. Real montage-type shit going on. Real pulsing soundtrack.
Like,
real slick.
It's cool. And this was the first synth rock soundtrack.
Ooh. That's
in
big.
In film history.
That's big.
Yeah.
Tangerine Dream must have been thanking their lucky stars.
I don't know if this predates Carpenter's Halloween, does it?
Oh, no. Halloween.
No, Halloween was 70, yeah, whatever. Yeah, but that wasn't really synth rock. There was synth in there.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. This was the first synth rock soundtrack.
Yeah.
So you get a little backdrop of that, which really fits, and it really does kind of pave the way for a lot of what Carpenter did later on.
George Romero's huge career after this.
Yeah.
Huge career.
So it's very familiar sounds, if you will. And like you said, you're getting the kids talking like, we got to go to this. We're in a gang. We got to beat it there thing with the gang and the gang and the thing and the thing and the gang.
These kids are all like stupid.
And the gang gang thing and the gang and the gang and the thing.
Fleshed out interesting characters.
Thing and the gang gang. Gang and the gang thing thing. That's not what's cool.
What's cool is the shots of all the other gangs in their gang outfits, because all the gangs in this world have ridiculous matching outfits.
Not even.
And the Electric Eliminators have satin jackets.
You're missing something, and it's what drew you in, and you didn't even realize.
Not so sure.
Walter Hill.
The satin jackets is what drew me in.
Oh, I did like the jackets. Oh, that brings me to my next point. Let me get this one out first, though.
Oh, okay.
Walter Hill used all his cool tricks of filming cars driving past and just converted it to a subway train.
Now it's trains and people.
And he made those trains look so cool and so, like, mysteriously sexy.
Watching this as a kid in the suburbs back in the day, it was just like, the city is fucking cool. There's just trains that, like, go around in the sky. You
like,
can jump on them. People are wearing fucking crazy outfits. I was like,
really,
move me to the city now. Get me out of this fucking shitbox suburb, Mom.
He, just like he likes to make Westerns in all of his movies, the train is the horse in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And a cowboy ain't dick without his horse.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of the way the trains are shot, to me, important, powerful, significant.
We're doing
it's always dark. It's always
mock heroic fucking framing of things here.
But it's
just shitty neighborhoods,
right?
In fucking
and it's
New York.
It's shitty neighborhoods or it's dark subways. But that train presents some kind of hope inside of that dark
it's
awfulness.
Floating above all the fucking gutter tripe.
Walter Hill. No one's ever shot a fucking train or subway. Well, maybe a train because some westerns
like,
do
maybe
a good
not
job.
In like. mainstream Hollywood, yeah. But there's some autistic kids out there who have very lovingly shot a bunch of train footage that would blow your mind.
Yeah, that's a different podcast altogether.
But it's true.
Walter Hill does a great job presenting that New York transit authority or system, whatever they call themselves out mm-hmm. there.
Yeah.
My second bullet point I wanted to get to, and it's right in this opening mm-hmm. scene. You already pointed out all the different gangs, right?
Not all of them. I just talked about my favorite, the Electric Eliminators. Well, yeah, matching satin jackets.
There's all the... Yeah, oh yeah, fuck yeah. Dude, those coats.
Fuck that scorpion coat from Drive.
Yeah, no,
you're cool. Yeah. You're out there in the clubs in an Electric Eliminators jacket.
There's all the different gangs they're showing because they're going to this gang meeting. They get to the gang meeting. There's so many people there.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize while you're watching this, man, they employed a lot of extras for this movie.
Yeah, especially the opening scene in the park where they legitimately do have, it's got
1,000. I think they said like they had 1,000.
I would say like 1,000. It seems like I could see maybe it's just 500 shot cleverly to make me think there's 1,000.
Everything I read said they got 1,000 extras for that scene.
And all outfitted in their fucking gang.
Well, that might be like 1,000 counting the police too, but the police weren't that many in number. But here's the point I want to make. All those gangs they showed in that opening scene, some of them don't even show back up in the movie.
Yeah.
But it's still that presence,
it's
that
world building,
that screen command right there. And what I want to present to you is, can you imagine getting cast as an extra in this movie and getting cast to like not one of the cool gangs?
That'd be a shame.
Like right every there. Time they'd flash somebody, I'd be like, it'd suck if I got cast into that gang. Like that'd blow.
Yeah.
And you see those fucking satin coats and you're like, oh yeah, put me in that group all day. Like
I think the whole time I'd just be scheming on how I was going to get out of there without giving the fucking clothes back at the end of it.
That's fair.
I just got to get off of this fucking set any way I can. I got to run for it.
No one was allowed to
leave. Fuck my extra pay.
No one was allowed to leave set in colors, Nate. The surrounding gangs were very upset about the filming of this film.
Rightly so. They're made to look like a bunch of fucking pansies.
But seriously, that was one of the caveats.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't let anybody off the set with colors on, so there's that. So gangs,
they all get together in a montage sequence, and then once the montage stops, when we finally just have like one settled scene, it is Cyrus, the leader of these gangs, addressing everybody, giving his "Can you dig it?" speech. I'm sucked in by this montage, and this fucking Cyrus guy.
Would you agree that's like one of the most famous scenes in movies?
Absolutely.
Like, even if you don't know the rest of the Warriors, like everybody knows,
you
know, can you dig it?
And you know, come out and play.
Yeah.
Even if you haven't seen a second of this fucking movie. Yeah. And it's because this guy is legitimately up there doing a fucking sermon. This guy is like one of these fucking TV preachers that bilks all these old assholes out of their fucking life savings.
Benny Hinn, yeah.
He's charismatic. You believe that he's drawing these fucking young idiots together. And at this point, I'm just like, well, this is fucking great. This movie is fucking going to be amazing. I'm loving it. The world building's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's clearly this isn't real New York. This is some sort of fantasy fairy tale gang New York.
Right.
Maybe in some sort of near future or whatever. But, you know, the gangs are all colorful and weird. The gangs are all multiracial. Like, nothing that's going on in here has anything to do with fucking real life. But it's cool. You want to see how it plays out. You want to see how he continues to build this world. But then we got to enter into my next bullet point.
Huh.
This is a tale of two movies.
Yes.
Whenever things are moving along slick and we have a montage sequence going on, and there's a lot of filmmaking tricks going on, I'm fucking loving this movie.
Right.
Thinking it's one of the best things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Whenever it stops for a minute and the Warriors have to stand around and like talk to each other and have dialogue,
yeah,
it comes to a crashing fucking halt and just looks like a fucking D-level amateur production of non-actors delivering clunky-ass dialogue that gets fucking embarrassing to sit through.
Absolutely.
And it's not just like half this movie's good and half this movie's bad. Like, watch the first half. And then It keeps going back and forth from a really good, really engaging, fucking just slick action presentation.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, woof, they're talking again.
You talk, man, like the greatest actors in this movie are not the actors, but New York City itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like the cityscapes, the alleys,
mm-hmm.
the fucking overhead trains dripping down and fucking lightning in the background.
Very moody.
Like, all this shit just is fucking jumping off the screen at you.
The 80s were so good at making the city scary and gross.
God, like, you couldn't make this movie this day and age without heavy CGI.
Oh, yeah. Because, like, New York, just Bank of America signs look this and everything shitty out anymore. Of all, like, the fucking shots.
Oh, yeah, man, I struggle. I think Gary might be the only city where you could still film this movie.
Gary looks pretty cool.
Outside of East St. Louis, where they filmed the original Escape from New York, because East St. Louis still kind of looks like that.
I had a nice fried chicken meal in East St. Louis once. It was on a Sunday morning. Everybody was in their church clothes, though. It seemed pretty lovely.
Yeah, as long as the Duke isn't there yet.
Yeah, this was before all that... those riots in the streets and stuff.
I think I got out of there
just in time.
Ooh, so they're definitely back to that. So East St. Louis and Gary are the only place where you could still film this movie.
Yeah, I think even Detroit's getting pretty hipster at this point.
I've been. Detroit was lovely. Mm-hmm. I'd go back in a heartbeat. But yeah, the actors in this movie, man, just every time they had to talk, I was like, please stop talking.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads me to one of my bullet points where no one in this movie is likable.
That's another one of mine. So nothing to root for I have down here as a big bullet point. And a point you were making about the talking earlier, like, it really struck me during the Baseball Furies scene, which is a really cool scene,
mm-hmm.
where this one gang, the Baseball Furies, who are guys who have fright makeup on and baseball outfits.
Really the only coolly presented gang in the movie.
Yeah, and the reason they're cool and the reason you love them is because we see them gearing up and coming out to beat the Warriors' asses.
And they don't.
And they're silent.
They never say
anything. They're fucking quiet. Because every time the Warriors open their mouth, they're saying something that makes me hate them. Or anytime they see a woman, they're trying to rape her.
Yeah.
There's just, these guys are fucking goons. They're morons. Like, anytime they fucking come across a woman who's just like, hey, we're here to party, they're just like, oh, well, we're in a life and death race against the clock to not be beaten to death by every gang member in New York. But
I'll throw one in.
Oh, hell, girl, maybe we should hang around and have some beers for a minute.
I gotta get my dick wet.
And then they end up just getting the shit beat out of them again, whatnot. Yeah. They're fucking simpletons. They're rapists, especially Ajax. I mean,
especially.
We get a scene after the Baseball Fury scene where he finds a girl on a park bench and is just like, well, guys, I know we're fucking going to race against time to get back to Coney Island and not be killed by every gang member in New York, but I'm going to go try to hit on this woman on the park bench. Gets real handsies with her. She turns into a fucking cop. It's just, it doesn't turn into. It's not magic.
She always has.
You realize that she has been a cop. She handcuffs him to the fucking park bench. And it's just like, well, now you're under arrest. And it's like, well, raping didn't work out for that guy. At least none of the other guys are rapists. Then we meet Mercy, and they all start trying to paw at Mercy and rape at her.
Yeah.
And it's just like, nope. It's not just there was one bad apple in this fucking group of guys I was supposed to be rooting for. They're all fucking creeps.
And I went back and forth with this for a little bit.
They're all calling each other the F word over and over again.
Yeah.
Not the fuck word,
ladies and gentlemen.
Not the fuck word.
We gave Walter Hill the business for the fruiter line.
We're going way beyond Bruce Dern calling people fruiters.
Instead
in
of dancing around it, it's just a lot of, you know, FAG getting thrown around,
mm-hmm.
people letting people have it, and man, how dare you possibly like another dude, even though the guy that played Rembrandt was openly gay at the time.
Okay, I was going to say, who the fuck is Rembrandt, but once you say that, I absolutely know.
He was the one that spray painted the W in
the
graveyard.
The young, fucking timid one who's, you could tell he's not made out for this life, but one of my big bullet points, and one of the big questions I have, is the gayness in this movie. Rembrandt for sure, but I feel like at least like a lot of the other characters on the screen are striking me as being visibly gay. Like, my gaydar is just going off right and left. There's just a lot of gay dudes in this movie, especially him, but it's never addressed. Nobody's ever outed as a gay character. It's never even hinted that any of these people are gay.
It's very...
And I'm wondering how I'm supposed to be reacting to it.
It's very, like, Broadway stagey presentation,
mm-hmm. yeah, which is what gives it that vibe. Got a lot of West Side Story vibe going on in here. I was wondering, is it just because they casted out a lot of like local playhouses and shit, so you're just getting like fucking gay dudes in here, and these are just the only actors they could get, and there's just like, because nobody in this movie reads as a gang member. Nobody reads as somebody who's been in an actual fight.
Okay,
nobody reads as a real street.
So I want to get to this. And it's what I was going back and forth with in my head was like, none of these people are redeemable people. And then it's like, well, they're all in gangs. Gang members aren't redeemable people. Like, they're still...
that's the truth.
They're not making them fancy, like,
and
romantic gangs.
All, the cops. Yeah. You're not liking the cops in this movie.
Yeah, you're not liking them either.
Beat down all these teenage kids.
But Walter Hill, when he wanted to make this movie, wanted to make it with all black and Hispanic people.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was like, well, that's who's in gangs.
And yeah, it would have definitely... separating the gangs by race would have put much more of a realistic tint on this than the strange fantasy world one we have.
He didn't want white people at all in the movie.
Okay. Yeah.
And like Hollywood was like, well, no, you can't do that, man. You can't do that.
People like to see white people when they go to the movies. Yeah.
So the gangs kind of got watered down and made it a little more theatrical and this and that.
Like very theatrical.
So... In the movie, every member of the Warriors gets brought down at one point or another,
mm-hmm.
except for Swan.
Yeah.
Now, you know they were going to do a thing where Swan gets taken down.
Yeah, but there was troubles on the set, and they had to kill somebody else. I don't know. I've heard stories where they basically rewrote things halfway through because Walter Hill just wasn't getting along with, like, some of the actors or something.
Old dude that sees the murder, I can't remember his name, his character's name,
mm-hmm.
but he gets killed off quickly.
Yeah.
And that's because Walter Hill hated that guy.
Yeah, that's the story. And like, that guy was
go
maybe
fuck yourself.
Originally more supposed to be one of the main characters, but it was just like, all right, he's a fucking knob, like, kill him off. We'll fucking wing it from this point on. Now Swan's the main character.
Yeah. And then there was supposed to be a scene later on where Swan gets, taken mm-hmm. prisoner by a gay gang.
Oh, okay.
And it's these white guys with these, like, blonde wigs.
See, that would have been very interesting.
Doberman pinchers.
Because there's so much gayness seeped in this movie that I didn't know if I was supposed to address it or if I wasn't. Am I supposed to be feeling for these guys who are, like, probably closeted and, like, trapped in this world of masculinity and, like, don't know how to get out? Or am I just supposed to not realize that, like,
I think
at least 25% of the people on screen are gay?
I think, because, like, women are presented as, like, a minority.
Yeah,
like,
only time it flirts with it a little bit is when the Lizzies trick the Warriors into coming back and partying with them, and they're all, like, making out on couches, and Rembrandt's, like, very nervous to touch a girl or be a part of it. But then I'm just like, but also his character is, like, the timid, really young one, so it could just be like, oh, he's afraid of women still, but
and I think,
also he's so visibly out and gay.
Like, I think that, like, could have been, like, a subplot or, like, one of those unwritten things where it's like, read into it what
you
will.
Is this because Nightmare on Elm Street 2 situation where, like, yes, the filmmaker is baking a lot of gayness into it, but we're not saying it. But still, we're supposed to read into it.
To me, it works as a double-edged sword. And I think if they would have kept the gang in there that takes Swan over, and they're like, maybe, you know, did he get raped?
Shit.
Well, and Kevin Bacon got casted as one of those gang members.
Oh, that would have been perfect.
Yeah. So,
how'd that not make the movie?
If you,
I know there's a director's cut
that
around out there. I wonder if any of that got restored.
There is. I'm not sure what is. There was, like, an original opening too that was in the sunlight.
Yeah, and there's, like, a lot of just, like, cartoony wipes and stuff, like Star Wars-y shit that I know everybody hates. Like, nobody likes the director's cut, so I haven't bothered to look at it.
Yeah, so whatchamacallit. But with the whole homosexual thing, like, I think they could have presented it in two ways. If they would have done with the original gang there that was, like, ultimately, like, hey, we're full on gang, we kidnapped you, we might rape you.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're kind of presenting that kind of bleakness, like you said earlier, where it's just, it's women are the minority in these, it's over masculine world. And it's like in your head, like, just how, like, the fucking, you know, the Greeks and the Turks and all them, they used to, they'd invade and then just rape everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of in the back of your head.
Sure.
And then if it would have culminated at like Swan getting like taken advantage.
Famously, not really, but always talked about as being an adaptation of a classic Greek tale.
Right.
Where a bunch of Greek warriors are trapped behind enemy lines.
So do we finally like
so that's build to that
as like where, a, yeah.
Where
as,
the butt stuff would start coming
but,
in.
Yeah, do you kind of...
the Greek roots of
do you
the
kinda,
story.
Are you kind of building towards that as like a, these are the horrors of war. Like somebody will just get a hold of you and they do whatever they
yeah,
want
I mean,
to you because it's fucking
it,
war.
That's definitely what I'd be going
And
towards.
Then at the same time, when you said with the Lizzies, when they go do that scene
mm-hmm.
where they're like, oh yeah, you're going to fuck us. They clearly Psych! Show, but they clearly show like the two girls dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just a tease. It's like these women are into each other.
Yeah.
They have no interest these, in these men.
And these fucking like the warriors are just oblivious to it.
And
like, they're dumb as fuck.
They're on the complete...
Back to that point.
But it, the cool thing is, they're on the complete opposite side of the spectrum where the men might be fucking other men because mm-hmm. there's no women around and it's this overt sexuality thing. Like, I gotta show you I'm more dominant.
They do whenever come across a woman talk as if there are no women in Coney Island where they're from.
Right, like, and what I'm proposing is like I said, how the dudes might be fucking each other because there's no other choice and they have to like, I'm going to fuck you because I'm going to show you I'm the most alpha
yeah.
male. Just like they do in prison.
Show me your jail pussy.
Now, these women are fucking each other because they're like, we're all we got. Mm-hmm. We have to band together. We can't trust the men.
Oh, yeah. We can't be out there like Mercy.
Yeah.
Just hanging out with Swan being called a whore until we like fall in love with him from it.
Yeah.
He's called me a whore a lot. This guy seems pretty
this
cool.
This guy seems
maybe
on
I'll
the
go
level.
Live with him.
He seems on the level. So, yeah. I don't know.
And he's the closest we have to a protagonist.
Interesting dichotomy.
And he's just calling a bitch a whore over and over again this whole goddamn movie.
Whole goddamn movie.
The streets are rough, but I don't know. It doesn't feel like it's pointedly trying to like make commentary on that. It just kind of feels like, well, these characters are fucking cocksuckers.
Yeah. But again, it's
not literally.
It's a movie about gangs and... Mm-hmm. Gangs aren't full of nice people, man.
But I feel like it wants to have it both ways because the movies wants us to root for the warriors. It doesn't want us to see them in shades of gray at any point that I can feel like, but they're still just pieces of shit like all these other... And like there's like some nobility to it they try to build in, especially with like whoever Cyrus's gang was, all the black dudes who show up at the end. These guys are like cool and reasonable when
the
they find riffs. Out the war. Yeah, when they find out the warriors aren't really the ones who killed Cyrus, they're like, "All right, we're gonna let you go. You're honorable people, just like we are." And it's just like, no, all these people are pieces of shit. Like you're half stepping with all this like honor among thieves stuff. There's no like samurai code going on in this movie, but they kept on like trying to pretend like it was so that we would like root for the warriors to make it home. But like I said, I was rooting for the baseball Furies to beat the shit out of them with their fucking baseball bats.
I don't know. It almost seemed like there was different levels to the gangs. Like some of the things they did present, well, like the riffs, like they were deep.
Yeah.
There was a ton of them.
I thought it was cool when we meet the orphans who one of them's Mercy's brother or whatever. Yeah. They're like, oh, these are low level fucking pussies. Like these guys are just playing like they're a gang.
But, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like
there's a lot of cool alpha male like sniffing around each other's shit going on in that scene.
Like the riffs were like I said, they were like 50 to 100 deep.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they can play by that and be like, we got a code.
Yeah.
You don't want us to fucking completely destroy you. You do what we say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it works. And then, like you said, the orphans were just like trying to get on the map. And there was like a whole bunch of disrespect. Like, you don't know who the fuck we are. We're the orphans, man. Like, why weren't you at the meeting then? Whoa, we should have been at the meeting. Why didn't we get invited?
And they instantly back down and are like, all right, the warriors, you could like come through our fucking territory.
You set a car
on
fire.
As long as
we're scared.
But it's even before that, like they're just going to let them go. And then it's Mercy who's like, I'm engaging in this toxic masculinity as the only female character in the movie. Like, no, you guys
Which
are fucking pussies if you don't let these guys through. Like, you need to be men. You need to step up.
Which
it's
is
just like, what is this Mercy character? Like, she's not giving us any fucking insight into, like, the female perspective of this world. She's the biggest fucking misogynist in this goddamn movie.
It's funny because the last time we were involved at an altercation at our favorite watering hole, there were some guys getting loud with each other.
Oh, yeah.
And we just kind of stood up to make sure that like it wasn't going to get out of hand and we were going to escort them out of there.
Yeah.
And then one of the bitches came at you and was like,
she went at me hard.
Why the fuck you get out of my face?
face, ba-da-da-da-da.
And you were like, you can't put your hand on me. And you were ready to choke a bitch.
Well, I restrained her. Yeah. Just popped her shoulder a little bit and grabbed her wrist to keep her away from me.
Yeah.
And then her sister then jumped on me and kept screaming, don't touch my sister. Don't touch my sister. So I kept saying, your sister's touching me. And she's like, no, you're not. And I'm like, your sister can let go at any moment. And
you
then she won't be in this predicament anymore.
You were dealing with those crazy bitches.
And the whole time, those fucking original assholes are like about to fight the 90-pound female bartenders. Yeah. We're in a real warrior situation.
Yeah.
I should have thrown a Molotov cocktail at something.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. We didn't, We were just trying to get home to Coney Island, Nate.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's the part of the story we never mentioned. The Warriors got stranded at the meeting and have to go all the way back across the city to Coney Island.
Got to hit that all the way until you hit the ocean.
And that's what they're doing. They've been doing. They get there.
I mean, that was in the plot synopsis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You put it
It's
in
all pretty there. Clear.
So, yeah, I don't know. What else is there to really talk about? The fights. There's some cool fight scenes.
Fight scenes are fun. Yeah. I like just how much it moves and how, like, we're always in a chase or always in a fight. That bathroom fight where they fight the hillbillies in the fucking... Here's a sidebar. You talk about being in the lame gang. These guys are having a conversation like, oh, these gangs got their own fucking outfits and shit. What should ours be? I don't know.
Dexy's Midnight Runners?
Overalls and striped fucking polos.
Yeah.
Long sleeve polos. Okay.
Yeah.
And then their leaders like on roller skates. That's how you know he's the leader. It sets to a cool like fight in a subway bathroom, which also made me think... Is this a thing that happened in the 80s? Is this a thing that happens in New York? Certainly not anything I'm aware of in Chicago or any other fucking, subway system I've been before. There's public bathrooms in the subway? That can't be a thing.
Oh, yeah.
That would be the most disgusting, just destroyed, bumhole haven fucking thing ever. Like,
that's a great point.
You can't have a fucking public bathroom in a subway. That would be a disaster. Is that real?
No.
Does that really exist anywhere?
No, it doesn't. Because they stated that was like one of the only scenes that was shot on a set.
Makes a lot of sense.
So clearly they used like a blank door in a real subway. And then they were like, what's behind that door? This Hollywood set. That's a bathroom.
Sure.
That's a great point. Well, now I got to go back now. Hold on. You're making me retract my statement. Because I do believe there's a pretty good scene in Maniac where he kills that woman in a subway bathroom.
I think I was having the same thoughts while we were watching that movie. But that was in the middle of a long festival. So it's all kind of a blur.
Maybe there were.
I've read articles
in the late 70s, early
80s. Secret bathrooms you can find in the CTA. Like, I've seen it out there, and they're like, if you go to this stop and you go down here, and like, there's a secret door. If you go through that door, there's a bathroom.
I don't think I'd want to.
But there's no
it.
Like public facing bathrooms anywhere in the CTA.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Good Lord, that would be the smelliest thing to ever happen.
That scene in Maniac's pretty cool, though.
That whole movie is fucking cool.
Yeah, it's
you want to talk about 70s grime? That movie's got more of it.
Oh.
You could try to scrape the grime off that movie for years. Oof. It would never happen.
Oof.
So, I don't know. I think the one overarching main thing we haven't addressed is the main villains of the movie, sort of. David Patrick Kelly's gang. And David Patrick Kelly, the Rogues. He is the one who shoots Cyrus and ends this whole glorious utopia of the gangs coming together. He's the one that blames the Warriors and gets all the other fucking gangs chasing after them via updates from a sexy radio DJ.
Yeah.
He's like, hey,
that's,
I hear the Warriors are down on 3rd Street now.
That's the chief from Carmen Sandiego.
Other gang members. Oh, I thought I knew that mouth somewhere.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to Acme. I'm the chief. But you can call me, the chief. We're in the business of tracking down thieves, and we're ultimately after one, Carmen Sandiego. Every creep we've ever collared has been working for her. Now, when you report for duty, I assign you a case. You go to the scene of the crime and look for clues about where the crook took the loot. Then the chase begins. Any bystander is a potential witness who can point you in the right direction. When you finally catch up with the crook, you've got to bust him. But remember, you can't arrest a crook without a warrant. And you can't get a warrant if you don't know what the crook looks like. Now, I could tell you lots more, but the best way to learn a job is on the job. So, are you ready for your first case?
So these guys, eventually, they become the big final boss. Once the Warriors fight through everything, they hop enough subway trains, and they get back to Coney Island. The Rogues are there waiting for them, and we gear up for one final battle, and this is where we finally get the clink, clink, clink of the bottles.
Yeah.
David fucking Warriors. Patrick Kelly doing his Warriors bit. Showdown, and he's about to shoot fucking Swan, but Swan throws a switchblade into his forearm. He misses with his gun, misfires because he's got a knife, and then he starts just fucking begging like a little bitch.
Yeah.
And this is just glorious. Every second of him just shrieking and begging. Yeah. And this guy is one of my favorite just bad guy goon actors in film history.
You're a funny guy, Sally. I like you. That's why I'm going to kill you last.
Fucking, you take all the crazy shit in The Crow. You take fucking Schwarzenegger telling him, "Remember when I said I would kill you last?"
Sally.
Kiss my ass.
I can't hear you.
I'll say it a little louder then. Get fucked.
Listen, loyalty is very touching. But it is not the most important thing in your life right now. But what is important is gravity. I have to remind you, Sally. This is my weak arm.
You can't kill me, Matrix. You need me to find your daughter.
Where is she?
I don't know. But cook those. I'll take you where I'm supposed to meet her.
But you won't.
Why not?
Because I already know. Remember, Sally, when I promised to kill you last?
That's right, Matrix. You did.
I lied.
This guy's got a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah.
And if there's anything that, like, fucking props the Warriors up and makes it still a thing that I love to watch every once in a while bust out, it's his fucking performance and everything he does. He's great. I wish there was more of him.
And the best part is, before the whole bitching out and getting the blade stuck in him, we talked about how no one's really redeemable in this movie and everybody's kind of shitty. And
yeah.
The baseball furies are presented as frightening.
Until they just get the shit kicked out of them by the Warriors.
Everybody's frightening just on the account of numbers and gang mentality.
All those skinheads riding around on that, like, out like bus. Yeah. They were pretty cool.
Yeah, and then all that happens is one of them swings a board at Ajax.
Yeah.
Instead of stopping the truck and just getting out and 30 of them demolishing him.
A little chase back to the train station. There's a lot of chases back to train stations in here, which made me thinking, like, well, these guys should not be leaving the train station.
No.
They should just get their connections and keep getting back to fucking Coney Island.
My point,
Jesus Christ, Warriors.
My point
these
here
sidebars are doing nothing for you.
No matter how all these gangs are presented, the Rogues, but more specifically, old boy, David, whatever his face
DPK?
Is.
DPK?
He's the only one in this movie that's really presented as dangerous.
Yeah, like he talking at the end, like, why did you kill Cyrus? He's just like, I just like doing stuff like that.
That's what I do, whatever
he's
I want.
He's our Joker character in here. He's the fucking wild card. He's like, why would we join a gang to like have a system and like rules and shit? We're anarchists. Like, we're out here in the streets in these gangs just to cause fucking chaos and violence.
This is what we signed up for.
But then when push comes to shove, you're like, he's just a little fucking bitch. Like, he's just out here for the excitement, but he's not really a hard-nosed gang leader.
No.
Who are these goons following him.
Yeah.
You think they just got slaughtered, the rest of his gang out there on that beach when the black dudes surrounded them?
No.
You don't think they all just got fucking mass murdered right there on the beach at Coney Island?
No, I figure...
Everybody taking their kids out there to the beach the next morning and there's just like a pile of 25 teenage bodies in jean just jackets.
Bloodied white bodies.
Bloody jean jackets.
No, I figured they'd be like a purpose killing, like, we just murdered the fuck out of him. There's mm-hmm. literally nothing left of him.
Then his gang never scatters.
Forget what you just saw.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I prefer to picture the pile of bloody jean jackets and some poor little girl the next day, though, trying to go out and get a hot dog.
It's not like the stupid random shootings we get now these days. Mm-hmm. Like, back then, you killed people for a purpose, Nate.
Also, now that I think about it, though, who would be on the beach at Coney Island? Because this New York is not one who's populated. We get one scene on the train where a couple of like kids who just left prom or something get on, and they're on the same car as the Warriors, and it's awkward because these kids are all coiffed and clean, and the Warriors are filthy and look like fucking gutter rats. Other than that, there is not a single other character in this movie who's not a gang member or a cop.
And
the whole movie is shot in the streets of New York. New York is empty in this movie. The entire city's fucking empty.
One quick point I want to get to. There's the scene where, you know, Swan and Mercy kind of start to have an understanding mm-hmm. after the 11th, I'm going to rape you, you can't rape the willing scene.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
They had a real weird dynamic.
And he's like, why are you like that? Why are you such a slut? And she's like, because I like to have fun on the weekends.
And also, like,
what's it matter to
you? He's talking to her like he knows her.
Yeah.
They just met.
Yeah.
He doesn't know who she is.
But he knows she's a whore. And he's like, why you
gotta... Sometimes you can just smell it on
He's like, why you gotta be like... That's usually a BV.
Oh.
Ew. So... He's like, why you gotta be such a whore? She's like, I just like to fuck on the weekends. Like, that's my mm-hmm. business. Yeah. So what? There's nothing else going on.
Yeah, we're in dead end lives. Yeah.
She's like, sometimes
in the moment. Yeah.
She's like, I want more, but there's not more. You know, like,
mm-hmm.
I wish I could think
that maybe we were building some sort of like overarching theme into this movie, but it didn't really. It was just this one conversation.
But it stands because these people don't know anything else, and they've never been presented anything else. Yeah. And so that's what makes that train scene work for me, was they're both fucking sitting there, and there's no, like, cute, like, let's hold each other's hands and, like, put our heads against each mm-hmm. other and be like, we could be that someday.
Oh, hell no.
They're both just uncomfortable and just, like, staring at the couple.
Yeah.
And, like, there's even, like, the part where, like, instead of, like, holding her hand or anything, like, Beck just kind of like shakes her and it's just like, get your shit together.
Oh, that was I really liked a complete scumbag. That moment. Yeah, because like she sees how clean they look and she sort of has a moment of self-consciousness and tries to push her hair back behind her ear so she doesn't look like such a like ratty animal. And he nudges her like, no, don't.
Yeah.
That we're what we are is
like
fucking living it. Just living
it. We are what we are. They are what they are. And you know,
we're not the assholes. They're the assholes.
Right. It's just a really cool scene to me, man.
Yeah, it's like the only scene in the movie that stands out to like, it seemed like they were trying to get something to something here, whereas no other point in the movie is there any like character arcs or themes, and I gotta wonder like, is there more stuff that was shot that like followed up on
that
or built into that? Because it seems just like just dropped into the movie completely like separate from everything else.
Again, if you look at Walter Hill's movies like Westerns, it's that sometimes those are so gritty, so grimy, and that's that last bit of humanity shot right there where it's just like, are we or aren't we? You know, are we you know, the humans or the animals? Which ones are we?
Definitely.
And, you know, and she tries to fit in, and he's like, no, we're too far gone. And then eventually, at the end of the movie, they escape, they whatever, and then they run down the beach.
Get a job at a Kinko's?
And they run down the beach, and they're like,
maybe.
They're
all clean-cut white kids.
You know, they cue up the Joe Walsh, and they're like, maybe we can be something bigger than this. Maybe there is something more than this. We did escape. We finally get sunlight. We finally get the, you know, the hope.
The hope
that
in
is
the
sunlight.
Form of Joe Walsh singing in the city.
Well, yeah, there's that, too. Which is
one
like
of my
bittersweet.
Final weird bullet points is that this isn't just like... This song is for the movie, In the City. It's about the weather. It's just like... Somewhere. You got this movie about all these fucking gang members, these street punks out there living these crazy gutter lives. The punk movement is in full swing.
Yeah.
Like, how does this movie not have, like, a fucking seminal, legendary punk fucking soundtrack?
Yeah.
Like, with the,
yeah, you got Joe fucking Walsh, man.
Nobody on this fucking set was clued into this scene that was going on in New York, where this movie is set at the time. Where
yeah,
like,
CBGB's going on in full swing.
This fucking movie full of punk.
Yeah.
Like, how much more of just like a legendary, like, watershed cultural thing would the Warriors look like right now if it had like a really great punk soundtrack and like always did and reflected the times that came out in that? This fucking Joe Walsh song, don't get me wrong, it's a nice like driving down Lakeshore Drive on a Sunday
song.
Afternoon song, but
driving out of Lakeshore,
yeah,
listen to the words, buddy.
For the fucking Warriors, it's insane. Like, how do you make that song for this movie? It doesn't match this movie at all in tone and fucking sound. It's crazy.
You gotta listen to the words, man.
I mean, yeah.
The whole words are about something's gotta be better.
Sure.
I know I just can't fucking live in this city anymore.
Yeah.
And it's uplifting.
But they have
but, like,
to.
But, just bleak.
Because they're at the ocean.
Yeah.
There's nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
Other than unless they're gonna fucking bodie it out.
Paddle
in
New Zealand?
Yeah. So this is how this movie should have been. They should have all just paddled out on surfboards into the Atlantic. I got one final question before we wrap this up.
What's that?
The one warrior who is a black guy dressed up like an Indian chief.
Nope, that's not Ajax. That's, I forgot his name, but yes.
Is that a beautiful display of multiculturalism, or is that racist as fuck?
Oh, the one dressed as an Indian. I'm thinking about the one with the fucking turban or whatever that gets killed at the middle.
Oh, the original leader, who's the only one who seems tough or like he could really be like
a
fighter in the entire movie, and he dies instantly. And I'm talking about the black Indian chief.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Racist, or is just like, no, the country's a melting pot. It's beautiful.
It is literally the single outfit that inspired every white kid at that first rebranded Lollapalooza.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
So we're calling it a beautiful...
So take that what you will.
America's a beautiful melting pot.
America's for everybody. Waka hey.
That's crazy!
We're going to do a little coming attraction here to see what our next stop along this Walter Hill journey is. We're going to take a break. When we come back, the Warriors enters Judgment Day.
Hasta la vista, baby.
David, Keith, and Robert Carradine as the younger brothers. James and Stacy Keach as Jesse and Frank James. Dennis and Randy Quaid as the Miller brothers. Christopher and Nicholas Guest as the Ford brothers.
You don't give us no trouble, mister.
The most famous outlaw heroes of the West ride again. The Lone Riders. Rated R. Starts Friday, May 16th at a theater near you.
Oh. Wake up, baby!
Wake up, San Francisco?
Yeah.
Wake up!
Am I the Aunt Becky then? You're the Danny and I'm the Aunt Becky in this scenario?
You would never ever have kids in your lifetime, nor ever pay $500,000 to get them into school.
Oh, no. If they don't have a scholarship, they're not going to school. I'll tell you that much.
You keep a tidy house.
That's true. I could see myself having a wife that dies.
That'd be convenient.
That's something
for
that
you.
Would happen to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm the Danny here. Yeah. You're clearly the Aunt Becky of our relationship.
I do present a lot of va-va-voom, if you will.
And Maria's the Uncle Jesse.
No way.
She's always so obsessed with her hair.
No
it's
way.
It's a different color every week, man.
Bullshit, I'm Uncle Jesse. She's Uncle Joey.
Cut all it day. Out.
And she's like, no, she's the Gibbler.
Let's be fair, we're all the Gibblers in this life we've got going on here.
Always, that's a meme right there. Always wanted to be a Jesse. Always been a Gibbler.
That's true, yeah. Whatever, I fuck with Gibblers.
Yeah.
Judgment Day
Gibblers
is our final fucking little sequence here in this podcast we do every week. It's where we judge the movie.
Yeah, we've done a good handful of these.
We
now.
Rate
you
it.
Can't figure it out.
We look
idiot?
Out into the world. We see what the rest of the world, how they judge the movie.
Some kind of dummy.
The Warriors has been around since the late 70s, so it's been judged a lot over a lot of years. I did some digging. I found us some one-bullet reviews, some five-bullet reviews, just to, you know, test the waters, see what these people are thinking, and then see how we feel about
the
it.
The pros and the cons, if you will.
This first one-bullet review is from IMDb user Elmer FLP.
I'm more of a fan of the Amazons, but this is... Let me have it.
Elmer says, "One of the most mind-numbingly awful movies I have ever seen. This film masquerades as a gritty battle of New York City gangs in which a noble few make their way through daunting odds to their home turf on Coney Island. In reality, this is a microcosm of everything that is destroying America. Number one, obsession with New York City, which for the past 50 years
America.
Has degenerated into the most pathetic cesspool in America, although it still fancies itself the Big Apple, quote unquote. Number two, romanticizing thuggery and debauchery. Number three, silly obsession with the lowest and most idiotic people who have about as much in common with ancient Greek heroes as Homer has with such frauds as Jack Kerouac and Maya Angelou. The time wasted on this movie would be better spent reading a good book, napping, or playing with your dog." One bullet from Elmer FLP.
I like how he threw out Jack Kerouac first to make it look like it wasn't like
yo,
a hey, I hate
thing.
Black
yeah.
people.
I'm not just throwing shade at Maya Angelou.
Like I
she
know,
sucks, but also Kerouac sucks.
I know this whole review really sounds like I'm getting at the fact that I hate black people,
also,
but like, no, Jack Kerouac
who
sucks,
who doesn't
bro.
Suck? Homer. Everybody loves reading Homer.
Yeah.
You want to sit around and read some Homer next time we get a lazy Sunday going on?
No, but I know one person who does. Just one.
Jennifer Lopez in the movie The Boy Next Door.
I was going to say Dan Smart, but yeah, probably.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. But yeah, like it's slim pickings, man.
The next one is a one bullet review from Amazon user Steve. This one's short, sweet, to the point. "Written and filmed as though somebody didn't have anything to do for the evening. I would rather watch my oil, semicolon, go down my dipstick." I had to say the semicolon just to let you know it was in there. Because it makes his point even less decipherable. "This guy would rather watch oil go down his dipstick than watch this movie again, Matt. One bullet."
Well, you know the old saying.
Fuck this movie. What's the old saying?
I don't know. I was hoping you could tell me. Something about an oil down a dipstick?
Like sands through the hourglass. It's oil going down a dipstick.
What?
Those are one bullet reviews.
You pull the dipstick, you wipe the oil, you put it back in to find out where it's at on the
You'd have to like shrink down like Ant-Man to be inside there to actually watch the oil deplete as like the car was being driven or something. I don't know.
My guess on that guy is he is of the homosexual world that we talked about within this movie.
Sure.
And he also felt like he had to be ultra masculine. So to do so, he made a car analogy, but... And being extremely homosexual.
Careful.
He's like the comedic, like cartoony gay where he doesn't know anything about cars.
John Waters fun gay.
Yeah, right.
There's one thing I saw that was linking all these one bullet reviews together. It was that all the people writing them, they all seemed to have a point in their review where they thought they were too smart for this movie. Like, I'm smarter than this movie.
Me.
I'm up here. It's down here. Me. Some people, though. They're not so snobby. They love this movie. They wrote five bullet reviews.
Wait on me. I'm going to drink some wild turkey.
This first five bullet review is from IMDb user and Baby Oil and Blow favorite, Will DeBeast.
Oh, it's back.
He's making a return on the show. Another Will DeBeast review here. We'll see what he has to say.
The Warriors, we're going to get him on the show.
I mean, I've got my people on.
We can find out.
The Warriors may be a camp, conceptual ballet choreographer's vision of street life, but it still rocks the bells. The names, the music, the design, the simple story, and don't forget those jackets are flick knife sharp. Why don't gangs this uber cool exist anymore? That's cool, K-U-H-L. Because they never did, or you can't remember that, old man.
Did you say K-U-H-L?
Yeah.
And not like K-E-W-L?
No, K-U-H-L.
Making sure.
On the train journey home, contrast the affluent optimism of the young couples laughing with flowers after the big show with the filthy, bedraggled, and hopeless ghetto pride of Swan and his desperate squeeze. Only one side of the carriage looks embarrassed, and it ain't the Warriors, baby. Makes me want to rumble in slow-mo on roller skates. 5 bullets from Will the Beast.
All right, we were talking off air about the documentary,
Peek Behind the Curtain.
The Wolf Pack.
That's right.
About those weirdo Hare Krishna kids stuck in a apartment
shitty
they couldn't
New York
get out
apartment.
Of in New York and just like struggling to identify with culture.
Clearly sexually abused by their dad, but the documentarians had agreed not to address the matter or something because they kept stepping around the edges of it.
All I can figure out from this wildebeest character is that he is one of those brothers.
That's very possible.
Or he is some kind of...
It'd be extra exciting if we got him on the show.
Or he's some kind of alien android that was placed on Earth with like a super, super duper likeness. But there's just a little bit that doesn't add up. Like
I could see that.
Like saying K-U-H-L. And
sure he's not
old
just
man.
A party animal? Just a cool-ass party animal?
I've hung out with some legendary party animals, and I'm just saying it doesn't quite add up.
Our next 5-bullet review is from IMDb user Dusan22. He says, one of the best action movies ever made. With IQ over 20, you will find the IMDb rating ridiculous. Many copycats have followed the steps of Walter Hill since 1979, and none even got close to Warriors. Camera, plot, movie rhythm with constant intensity plus great soundtrack. Everything we haven't seen for last 30 years. Film had become a cult before many generations of today IMDb users were born, and most of the people therefore are not aware of the idolatry that this film spread around young generations around the world at that time. At the time when movie posters were still hanging on the doors and walls of the teenagers' rooms, Warriors were regular choreography. It would be such a shame that some wise guy ruins this epic movie by making its remake. 5 bullets from Dusan22. What country do you think this guy's from, Matt?
I saw Train to Dusan, and I can tell you what country he's from.
Yeah, you think so?
Come on, man.
Is that a Korean movie, I think? Yeah.
So are you Chinese or Japanese?
Called your bluff. Dusan makes a lot of salient points. I don't think he knows what the word choreography means. I was thinking maybe he seemed like he could be from India. It seemed like when I see Indian guys trying to speak English on the internet.
The ocean.
In this
which
cadence.
Ocean?
That's crazy!
So there we go. Some arguments made that this is a shitty movie. Some arguments made this is an amazing movie. It's time to get Matt's argument. A more reasoned, just more learned argument. This is the one you're really going to want to pay attention to right here.
Struggle.
Whew. Wow.
One word. Struggle.
This is some abstract poetry.
It is perhaps the entire theme of this movie.
Ah, yeah, I could see. Yeah, absolutely.
Struggle to do better for oneself.
Mm-hmm.
Struggle to get away from a bad situation.
Mm-hmm. Struggle to think up the coolest gang outfit.
Struggle. I also struggled with what I wanted to give this film.
Wow.
As a rating.
Hey, were you able to sleep last night? Were you tossing and turning?
No, I haven't spent a lot of day. Usually I'll do these things day of. This one I watched a day in advance, gave myself a chance to think on it, and I'm glad I did because you kind of got to let it stick with you and you kind of got to
let it seep in.
You got to feel it out, I guess. I don't know. You don't, but
get it
you do.
Your hair and on your
I went
clothes.
Back and forth, or maybe I gave it too much time.
Snip
I don't
yourself
know.
The next morning.
Maybe my answer's not even the best answer, but I too struggle, and there's a lot of cool things this movie does visually, which we touched on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's if you know, instead of that weird tranny movie that Walter Hill made with old girl from Fast
Michelle
and Furious.
Michelle Rodriguez?
Yeah, remember?
That movie was
you
legendary.
And I drunkenly watched it.
Man, I really enjoyed that movie.
Oh, man.
Walter Hill has lost his goddamn mind.
Like, if maybe if somebody would have just been like, hey, you know what, man? You should make some kind of like survivor horror movie, you know?
Maybe like a Trespass.
Because he can do survivor
horror. Stay tuned.
But this movie, I can remember being a young child and it showing up on like the Saturday afternoon movie a lot.
Yeah, this is definitely one that like is part of my childhood, like this movie. And I don't know. I watched it a lot.
I can remember as a young child just being like, why is this movie on all the time? And as I watched this movie,
the rights to broadcast it were cheap.
Yeah, as I watched this movie as a grown-ass man, I thought to myself, why do a lot of people like this movie?
Wow.
And
taking controversial stances here. Warriors is a beloved cult classic.
I struggle. I don't know if I wanted to call it middle of the road or shade under. And even with that bitchin' Joe Walsh song that I love, I'm still going to go a shade under middle of the road and go 2.5 bullets for the Warriors, which is watchable, but just not quite good.
Not quite good, I will agree with that. But there's something about this movie that does just make it watchable. It does make it entertaining. If I come across it flipping through the channels, which isn't something that exists anymore, I'm gonna leave it on. I'm gonna watch it. There's something about it. The universe it creates is just cool and interesting, and it's fun to sit around in it because it's weird. It's unlike anything else. Great montage sequences. Great villain fucking performance from David Patrick Kelly. Great fucking speech from Roger Hill, who played Cyrus. Iconic moments, quotes that everybody knows. Everybody, people still talk about this movie. It spawned a video game or something that's cool. Something about this movie just gets into people and they respond to it. On the other hand,
people quote whatever that movie is, The Goodfellas. You like that one?
No, I don't like Goodfellas. That's a controversial opinion for another day. What's not controversial, I don't think, is that the acting in this movie, other than a couple standout performances, is pretty bad. The dialogue is clunky and weird. There's a lot of amateurish shit going on when we're not just getting pure Walter Hill filmmaking. I cannot call this movie good. Nobody's even believable on screen as a gang member, and this is a movie about gang members. It fails on that fundamental thing. I don't want to do it because I like to have a little bit of like a push and pull back and forth between the two of us, but this is, I think, a couple weeks in a row. We're lockstep directly. 2.5 bullets. I gave it 2.5 bullets.
It's...
Three bullets is a movie where I'm like, it's good, but it's not great. This is one where I can't be like, it's good, because there are a lot of bad things about it.
And that's exactly... Three is the middle of five. Three means it's good. It's just... It's good. It's not great. It's not
over
bad.
Fucking
it's
rated.
It's good.
If a couple of people hadn't shot each other in screenings of this and it hadn't become a media sensation, I wonder,
no one
would people still be talking about it? Would it have become like a cultural sensation, or would it have been as forgotten as, say, Streets of Fire?
And we're
another
not,
Walter Hill movie that go. Doesn't get talked about.
We're not calling you an idiot if you like the movie.
I am.
I'm not. The things that,
I still am.
The things it does well, it does really well.
I mean, that opening sequence works great as like a short film.
There's a lot of visual shit that's just like, man, that's cool to look at.
That
and this
baseball
and that.
Baseball Furies fight. If you just watch that out of context, you'd be like, holy shit, this must be the best movie ever made.
But there's just too many glaring, nagging things just take you away from it.
2.5 bullets. Baby Oil and Blow signs off.
We're 2-for-2 on Walter Hill here.
Yeah, we might, I'm hoping that we can get some arguing going on sometime in the future. Maybe with our next movie coming up next week. We got a bunch of pairs of different brothers, acting brothers, playing a bunch of pairs of real life historical figure brothers in Walter Hill's Western, The Long Riders. It's like the assassination of Jesse James, but not 5 hours long. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking about
it. I like that movie.
I did too, but it's way too fucking long.
Well, you know, whether you're going to get assassinated or whether you're a Brad Pitt or a Casey Affleck.
Definitely a Casey Affleck.
Whoever you are.
With the misogyny.
Whoever you are, baby, stay single.
It's a long road when you're on your own, and it hurts when they tear your dreams.